Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Do Good to Lead Well podcast series. I'm your host, Craig Dowden, and I really appreciate you taking the time out of your hectic schedules. And because of your incredible ongoing support and feedback and your enthusiasm around the Do Good to Lead Well podcast, we are now rated in the top 1% globally, according to Listen Notes. So a very, very heartfelt expression of gratitude. This could not have possibly happened without you. And another reason why the podcast is so popular is I have the privilege to welcome some amazing guests. And I'm thrilled to welcome you today, maybe across the pond, if you will, where I am speaking with Rohil Ahmad, the co-founder and managing partner of Forsyth Barnes. And he's joining us this morning on this podcast. Now, what's remarkable about Rohil and the Forsyth Barnes team is that over the past 8 years, in 8 short years, they've become an award-winning company, and they've grown from zero revenue to almost 100 million pounds during this period of time. Absolutely incredible. They recently opened an office in New York. They also have plans for expansion in LA and Dubai. And what's awesome, and this is one of the key things that Rohil and I connected on early on, is a major cornerstone of their success is their focus, preeminent focus, on company culture and employee experience. So with no further ado, and I could have said so many other things in terms of Forsyth Barnes being one of the fastest growing company, 3 years running, on and on. Rohil, a very warm welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast.
Thank you for having me, and an amazing intro you've just given us there as well. Couldn't put it better myself.
Well, you're welcome and very well deserved. That's what's fantastic. And one of the things I have to say, and this is what has been so exciting to me and why I was so thrilled that you'll be joining us today, is that right away when we first got connected, philosophically, your philosophy and how you've built this extraordinary organization, which I'm really excited to dig into with you, it's really around a focus on positive leadership, doing good to do well, to focus on people and connect with us at the core of our humanity. And for me, in writing my first book, that was one of the core motivators. I was like, people view leadership as iron fist, need to drive results. So I'd love for you, and I know you've just had a great announcement and a great achievement here. Just talk to us a little bit about your trajectory right now in terms of your industry and where you are.
Yeah, so I think, look, fundamentally, we're dealing with people all day, every day, right? We don't have an inanimate product that we're dealing with or going to the market with. So I think we have to apply that same mindset and same kind of humanity to the people of FB and of our own business as well. We're in what is considered quite often quite a cutthroat industry. So I think at its core and at its foundation, when we're growing the business and when I'm leading the business, I often think about it rather than if my business does well, then some of my people do well. If I focus on all of my people doing as well as possible, then the business can't fail to do anything but well and continue to grow. And I think that's served us quite well so far. The proof is in the numbers. And again, that's kind of manifested. We're a bootstrapped organization. We're in our eighth year. In an industry which globally is struggling, many of the big players and many of our kind of competitors and colleagues out there talking about 2023 have gone backwards, have shrunk, and that ranges from anything from 3% to 35%, as we've heard some of the numbers. We're proud to announce that we've just hit an 8-year record where we've matched our 2022 numbers already. We've got the rest of the year to go yet as well. So for us now, it's all about pushing that between that kind of 50 to 70% type number that we think we can achieve this year.
Well, and that's extraordinary. And again, what I love about it, it's a data-based approach. Proof is in the pudding that, hey, yeah, let's look at the numbers. And that's part of, for me, I think is so powerful is that there's an evidence-based business case. And for those of the listeners who may not be familiar with Forsyth Barnes and the work that you do, talk to us a little bit about your business and how you operate. I'd love to unpack that a little bit.
So we are a mid to senior exec headhunting firm, operate globally, started, as I said, a bootstrapped organization with me and my co-founder Scott out of London. We've then grown that pretty quickly within 12 months to a second office out of the UK, about in the Midlands, as my business partner was looking to relocate back there. That's where he's originally from. And we always had it in our design to become a global business from day one. Something that is bigger than just us. It was never just a lifestyle type business. We've been operating in the US market since about 2018 and started off in sports. And then the plan originally was to go out and open up in New York in 2020 for obvious reasons. That became quite difficult for us. Saying that, we're still working with our clients in the sports and entertainment world out there and had a record year through 2020. And then as soon as the borders opened back up, we had five or six who relocated with us out to New York and set up the team out there as well. So they moved out back end of June 2022. We've now just celebrated our first full year out there as of July the 5th. So it's been a phenomenal growth story so far, operating across fintech, sports and entertainment, and what we call e-tail, which is a lot more of the kind of online elements of retail rather than the kind of traditional bricks and mortar.
And I'd love to ask you, you talked about rather than looking at it as if my business does well, then I will reward. So it's like if then, kind of flipped it around. If I'm focusing on my people, my business will do well, which some might rightly argue this is a fair bit countercultural, especially as you talked about, this is a bootstrap, like UK, this just emerged as a startup.
Yep.
Where did that philosophy come from? And what enabled you to so passionately adhere to those principles right out of the gate?
I think through our own past experiences of growing up in the industry, to be honest, Craig, I've had some amazing managers and mentors in the past, and I learned a lot from them on how to do certain things really well, how to get people to buy in on certain visions and things around you and bring people around you. But for probably each one of those examples that I have, this is how you never do something. This is how you never let someone go. And that happened to me in my first job that I had straight out of university. I was let go on the phone. I was let go for wrong reasons, essentially, for not partaking in a drug type culture. And I was 6 weeks in, and I was told I wasn't gelling well enough with my team about 2 days later. And so straight away, I thought, I will always, there's going to be times, and it's never nice to when you have to let people go for whatever reason. I will always look them in the eye. I will always do it face to face. I'll always do it in respect. I'll never just drop someone a text or a phone call. And it's those kind of lessons that I'd learned on how not to do things as well as how to do things, which shaped a lot of our mindset as we started to form the idea of the business. And so then when Scott and I came together, we were in quick alignment that this business is going to be about our people, with a people-centric mindset, with a consultant-type mindset of what would they look for? What would keep them engaged, make them happy, keep them driven, what kind of things they're really looking for. Whereas most of our industry, unfortunately, it is very much a profits first and then culture and so on and so forth second.
Well, and it's so interesting because to me, as you talk about the broader industry as well, this is, as you said, you're in the recruitment space. And then you think, well, if you're doing that for other organizations, wouldn't it make sense to have like almost the pinnacle of culture and taking care of people in your own org, right? Within your own org.
You would think, You would think, I'd probably say the best example I'd give you is every doctor out there the healthiest that they could be? It's the same thing, right? Sometimes it's easier to show others and to kind of educate others, and you don't always necessarily take the best advice yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorite expressions is take my advice because I won't use it anyways.
Yeah.
And it's such a key point where people will go. And it fascinates me in my travels as well, where organizations, especially in the consulting space, will advise their clients around how to behave. And then when you turn the mirror back, it's okay, where is this internally within our own company? I've already got lots of questions, which I'm not surprised about. Tim said was really, it piqued his interest around employee-centric approach. So would love to hear some of the ways in which that you approach that to give a little bit more color.
Yeah. So look, I think globally, there's been a lot of talk over the last, 18 months, almost 2 years or so, about a global recession, both here and in the US, the conversations, right? We've had it a little bit different in the UK, where inflation was hitting us pretty hard and we could just see that number creeping up and up. We also had a large energy crisis across the UK as well, where the cost of energy, just simply to heat homes and electricity running as well, was becoming astronomical in what that was. So we could see that was only heading in one direction. Cost of food, cost of fuel, gas prices out here are huge in comparison to what it is back in the US as well. We could see that only going one way. If I remember correctly, it was about April time last year, inflation and everything all in was stood at that time at about 5%, maybe 6%, or was heading in that direction. It might not have just quite reached there at the time. And we sat there and we thought, like, we know and we understand the pressures that our people will be feeling. We've kind of come through that. When I got into the industry, it was just after the financial crash. I understand and I remember what that felt like to me at the time and the restrictions it placed on me. So we kind of toyed around and said, look, what can we do to help and support our people? What does that mean in various guises? And we came on a blanket pay rise across everyone in the organization. But as we were doing that, we then started to look at numbers and thought, well, 2%, 3%, yes, it's going to hit us. Is that really going to make a material difference to our people? And unfortunately, it just wasn't for us. It just wasn't going to cut it. So even though it was a bigger number, we felt that the right number, appropriate number to support our people was a 10% raise across the board for everyone across FB globally. And that was a thing that, again, it was way and above the inflationary numbers that we were experiencing at the time. But we didn't just want to raise what they had just to cover what they had as well. We wanted them to be in a space where they were comfortable. They're not having to worry about their own financial situation as much, so they could focus and without distraction on helping us grow the business. So that's one measure as an example that we took, and the response that we received, I mean, it actually went viral. We didn't do it for that reason. It was pretty unexpected for us. But the response that we received internally, which we still see that gratitude now from our people as well.
Well, and I can only imagine, I was going to ask what the response was like, because I can only imagine that people were, wow, like in this time of challenge, the easy decision is, okay, well, as an organization, we're going to cut back. We have to, right? We need to shore ourselves up and risk manage. And then to flip that around and go, you know what? You are an essential part of us continuing to grow. And we're not just going to meet where you are. We're going to exceed it. So there isn't anything that's holding that back. So you have the fullest of comfort that you're taking care of.
Yeah. My primary focus is I look at our people in, well, what's their ambition? For someone, it is to get on the property ladder. For someone, it is to get out of debt when they've joined us. For some of them, it is progression in their kind of career. We always try to look at what do they really want in life and what do they want from their career and how do we provide that? Not can we, because we invariably can. It's how do we provide that for them going forwards? And everyone's at a different phase. So we try to take that individualistic approach, but we always try to link it back to their internal motivations outside of their career and outside of their work. Because they're the thing that I take pride in. And when I can see someone becoming a parent for the first time, or I can see someone who's kind of upgraded their living standard, that's what I take the most enjoyment from. They're only able to do that if they're successful with us as well. And if they're successful to be able to do that, the business benefits anyway.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. And I've got a follow-up question again. They're coming in fast and furious. Sally was saying, love asking the people around how they want to be successful. What does success look like? Is this a standard question that you ask people? Like, tell me more about that. Is that part of the ongoing discussions you have with your employees?
Yeah. So when anyone joins the business at any respective level, the first thing that we kind of map out for them and say, right, you've joined at X level. Here's your next promotion. This is what you need to do in terms of your career development from day one. When they then get promoted to that level, we have a meeting, we celebrate with them. On the day of that promotion, we then say to them, here's your next level. Here's a criteria that you need to achieve. And it's not just the financials, but often the soft skills and so on as well. What we always try to tailor into that is their personal, where are they at in their personal lives? What's their situation? And because we've got a wide range of people at different ages and different backgrounds and demographics and so on, everyone's kind of got slightly different focuses. For some, it might be sports-based. For some, as I said, it might be getting out of debt. They've just come out of college and that sort of thing. For some, it might be elevating themselves to the next level in their careers to go and achieve X, Y, and Z in professional development and the training that comes along with that as well. And the skill sets that they then garner from that too. So we always try to look at a personal situation. I think we've across the business, not just once, and this is not just a meeting as well. So I'm not trying to take all the credit. My MDs across the offices, my SVPs across the offices as well, they get close with their people. And so they have a really good tangible understanding of where is an individual in their life, as well as their career, who is working on my team. What are they looking for? What are they engendered by? What are they motivated by going forwards? We always try to work with that because we want people to have a fulfilled career.
And thank you. I've got so many comments coming in. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Can I work? Are there open roles? And that what I really appreciate about this reveal is that there's such a thoughtful perspective taken to it, because in my experience, and I'd love to get your take on this as well, like in some cases, maybe it's many cases, it's all about the dance of getting someone on board and then the speed to get them in and onboarded and let's move, that conversation just doesn't happen at all. Or if it does happen, there isn't the depth which you're speaking about it today, or there's a lack of continued follow-up and accountability. Like it just kind of, it starts out okay and then it just fades over time. Like how have you been able to end that so closely in terms of the work that you do?
There's no formula per se. The approach that I take to it is, if you think about your own friendship group, right? Over time, you've got to know them just by spending time with them. And I'd honestly probably say that because it's that type of approach, I don't just look at every single person as a colleague or as an employee or anything like that. I count a number of people in the business as true friends. And it's probably just that natural approach and looking at them as a friend first rather than just an employee, which has probably enabled us to do that. And that's not just, I'm only just talking about me, and I will have a circle, right? And then my MDs, my leaders across the business will have their circles, and some of them will overlap and some of them won't. And look, I'm not sat here and said we get it right, perfect every single time. We don't mess up or we don't drop the ball on something either. I'm not saying that we appeal to 100% of anyone who's ever walked through the door. We will make mistakes and we will continue to make mistakes with it too. But I think the effort and the intent is always there. And if I can always see that, then I'm comfortable.
Well, and again, what's really interesting, just so revealing, it also reminds me of the Gallup research around engagement, where they say, well, what's one of the top, if not the top predictor, is having a friend or a best friend at work.
Yes.
What I love about this, it's a smart, if I may call it a human decision, it's also a very smart business decision. It's approaching it from a level of humanity and humanness that really propels excellence, because now we're part of a community. And I'm not surprised. I have a follow-up question from Tara, who asks, I'm loving hearing these ideas. What other cool things do you do at FB?
So as another example, I guess, we started off with a vision that everything for us is about experiences. For me, in my career, and I've kind of taken this through the business, although I appreciate it, not everybody does think this way, the money is not the primary goal. The earnings aren't the primary goal. It's a byproduct of success. If you're doing well in your job, you're well skilled, you're being progressed, you're being developed, and you're consistent in what you do, the money will always be a byproduct. For me, on a personal basis, everything is about experience. And so we've tried to bring that experiential piece into our business. So what we quite often do is when people hit a certain kind of first level in the business, we've taken on things like the track days, or if you're not interested in a track day, someone's been strapped to a plane and they've done acrobatic flying, doing loop-de-loops. Not my idea of fun by any stretch, but they wanted to do it, right? So we always kind of tailor experiences. So if someone looks back in 3 years and says September 23, Do I remember what I earn? And maybe if it was something astronomical and special, but invariably, I'm probably not going to remember the exact figure. But I can guarantee that I'll remember the first time I tried this, or the first time I did this, or the first time I ate at a Michelin-style restaurant. Whereas we're now averaging, we do two company holidays a year, which we pay for. The first time I went to Dubai, and we do it 5-star, and the guys don't have to lift a finger in terms of we organize everything. Most companies kind of do flights and hotels. For us, it's all entertainment, all food, and we always try to do the very best of the best. So we're in Dubai, we're in 5-star restaurants. We're at Michelin-star restaurants. We are in a 7-star hotel and doing afternoon tea there and things like that. And for most of the people there, they've never done anything like that. They've not had either the means to or whatever. And so will they remember the cost of it? Or I don't even know if they do know the total cost of it. Will they remember being in a 7-star hotel, looking at the suite and then overlooking Dubai and having afternoon tea there? Well, they remember being in the Burj Khalifa and overlooking the view. Those things are now talked about forever in our business. And those memories are with those people forever in our business. It's those kind of things that we do. As I said, we're averaging kind of two holidays a year now. We're now doing one to Mexico. Now, There'll be a bunch of people who have never been to Mexico. They will never forget that trip, ever. Right from the moment that they get to the airport, and we're thinking about that, to the moment they land back, they will never forget that trip.
I love that again, and so many reasons I was excited for us to speak today. What I love is that there's just so much parallels in the practices that you've naturally embedded into your organization, and then the linkages with positive psychology research, where they found it's not money that matters. You give someone experiences and you give someone the same amount of money exactly for the reasons you said. Like, money is just different. It's the experiences. It's the memories. It's the connection. So there's much more fulfillment in that. And there's a much stronger bond and sense of community that comes from that versus like, oh, okay, well, I made X. This is a bonus check for X. So just love the parallels here in that.
I think community is really important. One of the little things that we try to do on all those trips is that group that have gone, before we leave, I'll always get them a little something. And it's quite often a little cheesy thing, but from the airport, before we take off to leave, and it's only for that group. So where I got all of the guys that went to Dubai, we had a good group amongst us, and I got them all a little statue of the Burj. And that is only for that group. And that is something that brings that group of people together. And they know that there's only a certain number of people that will ever understand that trip and the in-jokes and so on, and the kind of message groups that we have within it as well. And then every once in a while, something will float back, or my iPhone will pop up a memory of something and it's sent back to that group. But when they look at that, they'll remember that trip of there's only X amount of people that ever receives that from us.
There's a question from Mike. Just wondering, to what extent do you share your cultural philosophy and practices with the organizations that you work with, and how do they feel about what you do within your organization?
Yeah, look, we're pretty open with it. One of the things that is a really hot topic and has been for a little while is diversity in our DI policy. And it's something that we've had to work on quite a bit internally ourselves. The industry as a whole is pretty male dominated. We can't get away from the fact that's not an FB thing. That's an industry piece as a whole, right? But we as a business were male dominated. Now, for the first few years, hands up, the most important thing to Scott and I was to have a good, successful business. We were profitable. We were paying our people. We were paying our bills, et cetera, et cetera. And it was all hands on deck on growing it. So we didn't really have the capacity to focus on too much outside of that. As we start to bring in more and more people and some amazing leaders into our business who have kind of taken on the mantle in various ways, we've now been able to focus on these other things such as D&I as well. We're now speaking a lot more about that externally with our clients, where we're holding events ourselves. We're now participating in our clients' events on that piece as to why it's so important. We brought in numerous parts on our own service, which are essentially guarantees, and that's been influenced by the Rooney rule out in the NFL, where the rule obviously out there was X amount of coach applications had to be from a diverse background. We've implemented the SB version of that for a number of our clients on their searches when we're headhunting for them. So we're trying to always push the button and the boundaries on what we're doing for our clients. But that has all started with the work we did internally first, before we could credibly go out into the market and talk about it. Otherwise, it would just feel fake to me.
No, absolutely. And again, awesome comments. Awesome. Fabulous. Love this. Got another question from Becky who says, I'm really enjoying the discussion on the people-centric side of the business. Curious on the growth trajectory. Like, wow, congratulations. Can you talk us through how you set those targets or achieve that level of growth across such a short time span? Would love to hear more of that journey.
So I think one of the things that often gets lost is you're either really nice and quite often fluffy, and it's a very kind of soft performance culture, or you've got a rule with an iron fist and it's a very high performance, tough kind of culture. I think one of the things we've done so well to date, and this has got to be something that we've got to maintain as we continue to scale, especially globally, is we've maintained that high performance culture and expectation standard as well. So we make no bones about it. We expect a lot of our people. We offer a lot to our people, but there's always got to be an equal balance to that as well. So we've been doing a lot of training internally recently around accountability and so on, and how to maintain that high performance culture as more and more people are coming into the business, especially for those who are in management positions or newer into those management positions or on that training pathway to management as well. Part of looking after your people and doing the best by them, on top of the other bits that we've kind of talked about, is giving them a platform and environment to succeed and to be able to perform as well. It's not just as simple as just kind of keeping them motivated, but making sure they've got the right frameworks and environments to learn, to progress, but to perform too. Otherwise, we're doing them a disservice. Otherwise, the rest of the stuff goes out the window because they're not actually able to achieve anything and they're not progressing and so on as well. So by maintaining as a foundation, I guess, that piece of strong performance culture, high expectation, that all feeds together and it has to go hand in hand as well. Because of that, again, if you look at our numbers, we're doing pretty well so far. Doesn't guarantee us the same trajectory as an automatic. We've got to continue to push that boundary as well to continue on the same growth trajectory that we have been. But so far, 8 years now, it is working.
No, and it's wonderful. I've got a follow-up question as well I'm going to ask shortly, Rohil. And one thing I really value, again, it's interesting. It's the power of the and. Do good to lead well versus do good or lead well is often seen as an either or. These are competitive forces. And once again, I just so quickly aligned with you, the philosophy and the results that you've been able to achieve, because no, these aren't combative. These aren't competitive. They're not opposing forces. You can have a high performance culture and treat people well. It reminds me of a conversation I had with Doug Conant, the former CEO of Campbell Soup Company. He said, you know, I'm tough on standards and I'm sensitive with my people. Both things are important. We can have exceptional standards and push for those. And so we should. And it doesn't come at the expense of our people. They are a critical part of it, a foundational part. I love that. So I also have a question from Garrett around accountability. Love that. Can you share a little bit more about the training or the conversations that you've been having? Because accountability is one of those interesting topics of conversation about how to do that well. So any nuggets on that, would love to hear from you.
Yeah, in fact, we just did this. So first of all, what we did is we, in certain topics, not just specific to our industry, we always try to get the industry kind of leading external trainers and experts in their field as well. So this all kicked off with an external provider, first off, an amazing man in terms of what he does. And he talked on the concept of accountability and so on. And then we did an internal follow-up to make it more specific to FB and the expectations and how to as well. Sat with the group that was in that training session. And we went through and said, look, first and foremost, when it comes to accountability, there can often be a negative connotation to it. And you can feel like you're being a bit of a tough manager and so on and so forth. But you need to switch the mindset around. You're actually doing them a disservice by not holding your people accountable. And all that will happen is if they're not performing because you're not able to hold them accountable, they'll not perform, they're not going to enjoy the job and so on and so forth, they're coming to work. That only goes in one direction. And you actually owe it to them as their manager. And it's something that I talk about a lot. As someone's manager or leader, the person does not serve you, you serve them. That's really important to me. So it's got to make sure that you owe it to them to actually hold them accountable so they can do the best possible job for themselves to progress themselves and so on as well. Now, the second piece of that is we had a few people kind of requesting more training around accountability and how to have certain conversations. And I was going through and saying, in various other skills that required as our job, from day one, even though you had all the training, were you comfortable? And the resounding answer was no. Why not? Because we hadn't actually practiced it and put it into place yet. There's the number one answer right there. You must try it, put it into practice daily. The number one thing is actually just do it. Get out of that comfort zone. Do it. Do it daily. Practice. Stay consistent with it. And it becomes so much easier. Like any skill, you can learn the theory and so on and so forth. But until you put it into practice, you won't learn. And that's the biggest thing. And I guarantee them that if they did it every day properly, as we've kind of shown them, for at least a month, they won't want any further training because they would have experienced so much in that as well.
What I really appreciate, again, in terms of the perspective and what's really interesting to me, and we've come across this in a bunch of different ways as we've been talking about, it's almost, here's a situation. It's our mindset, our perspective, our assumptions that then have a direct impact on that. So to play with this a little bit, right, on the accountability part, well, as a manager, as a people leader, it's my responsibility to ensure that people feel good about how they're performing, yeah, the value that they're bringing to the team. So then rather than, oh, well, I'm just kind of follow them around and this is all about micromanaging and sledgehammering them, this is all about, hey, well, how do I best support them? And the other thing that's so wonderful about what you shared, and I want to highlight this, is that accountability is a skill set. Difficult conversations, skill set. And unless we put ourselves in position to actually do this, like actually have these types of conversations and experiences, how can we grow? How do we get better? I love it. Got another question from Alexander wondering about, so what was it like in terms of expanding globally, setting up, you know, an office in another country? Any nuggets or insights or things not to do?
So what we did, we actually tried to set up a third office in another city in the UK in 2018, and it didn't go right at all. And we learned a lot of lessons from that. We had to shut that up after maybe about 18 months or so. The number one mistake that we made there is the leader that we've chosen for that particular office, we hadn't incubated them well enough. They weren't part of the culture and understood the FB way and the culture well enough for a long enough period of time. We through naivety, we rushed it. They spent a couple of weeks or so, but that was really it. And we thought by visiting regularly, because I was up traveling, I mean, for us, it's most of the way across the country, but I appreciate in US terms, it's different, but it's about a 4 or 5 hour drive each day, each way. I was doing that every Wednesday and was spending the day up there and so on and so forth. We didn't do a good enough job of integrating her into the culture, and therefore that particular office didn't work in the same way as well. So the number one thing that we changed when we set up New York was we took some of our best people, some of our best FBers who had been in the business a number of years, who we knew that they understand what that culture means. They bleed the business. And they were the ones who set it up out there. So we incubated them from the UK first. That was partly enforced. We would have done that anyway, but obviously partly enforced on us by COVID. And then as soon as we go out there, we had some business exemptions where we were allowed to fly over from, I think about fall 21, maybe late summer 21, where a lot of travel was still restricted, but we were given some of the exemptions by the US government. And then we started to do some regular first business trips and then help to get them integrated into the city, because our offices in Fidei, they all pretty much want to live in Manhattan. So we then started to do some trips where they're able to see different areas of Manhattan where they might want to live, where the kind of vibe that they were experiencing as well. We supported them in finding apartments. They did viewings. They didn't take any of those because of the speed of the market there. It just got them an idea of what they'd get for their money and what the process looks like and so on as well. So we did that. We then got a team of people around them, and we're now growing that outright, but they're a core and central part of the business, and they are FB through and through. UK is always home, right? But I love New York, and if I could be out there, I'd be out there with them in a heartbeat. I love that place.
That's awesome. And thank you again. Great insights, lots of comments coming in, and really appreciating your perspective on this. Have another question from Tom saying, so what are some of the best ways that organizations can go about onboarding, recruiting and onboarding talent? What are the best practices that you're seeing out there?
So organization is the main thing. And this is where we do a lot of our work with growing, scaling businesses, because quite often the corporates do have certain things in place. The very first place it all starts is actually your attraction piece before you start onboarding anyone. But actually, what's your attraction piece and what's your story that you're telling in order to attract people? And that's where we do so much of our work to help businesses, because they underestimate the power and the value in that in the first place. Then we start to go through, and the bit that most people miss is when you're going through a recruitment process and you're looking to hire somebody, you are evaluating them. You're essentially, you're judging them and whether they're right for your business. Most people focus on that. What they don't realize is it's also the other way around. And they're not just evaluating you as an individual if you're the person who's interviewing them. That whole process is a window into the culture of your business. So if it's labored and if it is slow and ponderous and there's a lack of transparency there, subconsciously or consciously, people going through that process start to look at that business and say, is this what the decision-making process is like? Doesn't feel very decisive. Feels a bit unsure. Feels it's taking time. If I'm trying to achieve something, or I go to senior leadership, or I'm part of senior leadership and want to explore an idea, an opportunity, an avenue, whatever that might be, is this what it's going to look and feel like when I'm there? In comparison to business over there that I'm also meeting, they're slick, they're quick, they're, in terms of what they're producing, is modern, their process is efficient, and so on and so forth. So a lot of successful onboarding even starts with the time taken on that process and how efficient, how transparent it is. Now, done well, we often do that for our clients. The client doesn't actually need to do too much more to what they're doing right now. They need to allow us to be able to do that with and for them, because it looks like it's coming from them more than anything. And I guess when we're speaking to a lot of clients, the number one thing that we want, and the kind of North Star, if you like, so any applicant to go through a process comes out of that, whether they're successful or not successful through any reason, then they come away from that and say, do you know what? That is the best run process that I've ever experienced. I'm gutted I didn't get that job. Or I'm so happy over my other four or five opportunities that these guys have picked me, because it's the best experience I've ever had, for so many different factors that we employ and go through.
Well, and I love that. And again, such great insights. And in particular, once again, it's being thoughtful at the beginning. It's laying the foundation. It's understanding, okay, what's the container? What's our end goal? What's our purpose within this? And so quickly we can rush into the tactics and like, okay, we got to get someone in and it's just, here it is. Rather than, as you're saying, hey, wait a minute, step back. Let's talk about what's attracting those people to you. What are the key things they're going to be looking for? How is every single interaction you have going to be reflected back as an impression about who you are? So if you take 10 days to follow up, or you get an automated response or something else, well, then it's going to be, huh, I wonder when I have an important thing that I need to raise, what that's going to look like within this organization. So I love how you, it's almost like creating guardrails for clients around.
It is, thoughtful. Yeah. It's, we tried to bring the human psychology piece into it. A good example of that is you're going to offer someone, and that you've got a broad background, experience background. You will know this. The majority, if I asked you the question, if you are making an offer to someone for a business of yours tomorrow, how would you go about it? For most people, it is, right, we pick up the phone and we go through the package and so on. And the end of it, it's very much just, da, 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 do you want the job? Are you accepting? Yes or no? I need a bit of time to think about it. Okay, cool. You can have your time to think about it, et cetera, et cetera. Flip side of that, you're proposing to someone to get married. And you don't think about the, do you want to marry me bit? You think about, invariably, how can I make this as memorable and as special as possible? So when we're coming to this, there's a reason for that, right? I mean, part of it is also to mask the kind of insecurity of, will they say yes in, to some degree, but we'll put that bit aside. When we're coming to things like offers and when we're doing them on behalf of our clients, which is pretty much every single time, we try to employ this human psychology piece. I want that person to be wowed, not just by what the offer is, but by the offer experience. So if they've got five offers on the table from our client, as well as their competitors, that from an experiential perspective, they've never felt and seen an offer like that, which is completely tailored to them as an individual. But they come away with it and say, wow, that has been so specified to me, my career trajectory, what I'm looking for, what I want to avoid and so on, that again, it just creates that positive piece and increases the likelihood of them accepting from our client too. And that isn't because the money is the highest or the package is the highest or anything. So we go through a whole process on our offer piece, which takes us quite a bit of time to do. It's not just a phone call of, do you want it? Here's a couple of days to think about it and so on as well. We actually go through and make sure that they've thought about it way in advance. So there's less of a decision that is needed to be made at the back end of it as well.
And what I love about that, again, is that, well, okay, as I'm considering that offer, it's the experience. How many, anecdotally, in my travels, and I'm sure in yours even more so, where people go, you know what? I took less money to be a part of this culture, this experience, because I believe in the mission. I believe in the sense of community. I believe in what we're trying to do. And hey, I actually think I'm going to exceed what I may have made over at this other place. It's something bigger than me. It's something bigger than all of us that we're buying into. And again, in my experience, I mean, if it's all about, okay, who's paying me more? Well, then as soon as someone adds even $5, it's like, bye-bye. And it's a monetary connection. And so there's so much more deeper piece to that. And I love, because once again, back to the experience, they're going to remember that. And then on top of that, I would imagine, tell their friends, tell their colleagues about, wow, that was just a rock star experience for me. And if there's ever an opening, you want to go work for this company. I'm interested, because you do work with clients globally. What are the leadership challenges you're hearing coming up as people are? Because as you say, you're bringing in people at that level. I'd love to hear about, so what do you see your clients talking about when it's the key leadership challenges they're trying to address and how you can support them at that?
I think probably the biggest one right now is the impact of the whole work from home piece. It's changing course now, right? It's a bit of a ship that's happening slowly, but it is changing course. We're seeing more and more organizations trying to get their people back into office. Societally, I think we kind of created this rod for our own back and made it this such an amazing thing without kind of considering all the impacts of it. And yes, there are numerous benefits to work from home, 100%. There are numerous benefits of now that we're able to kind of do business globally through the power of video, and it's more accepted and socially accepted now. And there are some amazing positives in that. But at the same time, I think so many people, and I actually worry for some of the younger generation, because they'll miss out on the social interaction. They'll miss out on the natural ability to kind of network and learn from their peers and from kind of top performers around them and so on and so forth as well. I think there's that piece now on engagement, which is a struggle, because you've got that balance of, well, people have been so used to it for being a certain way over the last sort of 2.5, 3 years or so, versus performance hasn't always been as strong, or industries haven't as quite been as strong, and so on and so forth as well. So there's a lot of conversation about how do we do that, where they were previously willing to accept full 5 days remote in any capacity. Now it's like, oh, well, we need three days in office or 2 days in office. That, then you combine that with a talent pool piece, because they were widening their talent pools. You could select someone who's willing to work East Coast hours who lived on West Coast previously. Now it's we need people here and close by, which is minimizing that and so on as well. So I think probably from a cultural perspective and how you actually lead in that environment, in that hybrid model, is a thing that I think we're still figuring our way through, and is kind of go up and down on the trajectory of that one too.
Well, it's interesting to share my own experience in this radio. I facilitate different CEO mastermind forums, and I would say that's also coming up in terms of, you're mentioning the younger generations and then relationships, the mentorship, the exposure, all of those things that naturally happened pre-COVID, if you will, when we were all co-located. So what does that look like, and how do you navigate that challenge? And also had the pleasure of welcoming Dr. Robert Waldinger on the program. So he's the best-selling author of The Good Life and the 80-year study of happiness out of Harvard. And when he was talking about return to office, work from home, that was a key thing, is that relate across 80 years of study, the key to a happy, resilient life is relationships. So yep. If we're doing, this is great for you and I today, because you're in the UK, I'm in Canada. So it's functional to what we're trying to accomplish. Yet if this is the predominant way or the sole way in which we interact with our world, it's different. So then what are those implications? So you understand both sides. How do you bring them together? So that's absolutely fascinating. I've got another question from Blake saying, I'm starting out my career. I have leadership aspirations. Any advice for how I can prepare for the challenges and opportunities of today and tomorrow?
Take on, depending on whether you've got a job or not at the moment, take on any opportunity where you can kind of put your hand up, even though it might be out of your comfort zone, in leadership type opportunities. It can start on a personal level. It started with me when I was about 10, 11 years old in sport. I first got into sport, and I can't tell you exactly why. Maybe it's through looking at my dad, he's kind of taking charge of things. I always just kind of naturally took on an opportunity to lead teams of people through sports. And that, I kind of did that as I was growing up as a child. So whether it's through sport or whether you can kind of put yourself and volunteer for positions where you're viewing other leaders, learn from other people around you, then don't be afraid to kind of put your hand up, even if it is awkward. I've been in situations in the past where I was a 22-year-old kid and I'm being asked to manage, and not just manage, but actually do kind of training seminars to those with a decade of experience, where I had about 9-10 months, who are about 10 to 15 years older than me. And it was awkward. And they clearly didn't want to be there. I'm in the room, there's a group of them, they're not looking happy. And I just addressed it from the get-go. And I said, look, by the looks of things, you don't want me to be here. This is a bit awkward for me, but we've been asked to do it. And at least you can take something from this. And there's a reason I've been asked to do it as well, if you look at performance as well. So you can either sit here and we can just kind of get through it and you don't take anything from it, but you're going to sit here anyway. You may as well try and take something positive and learn something from it, right? I think it's just that openness on communication and kind of trying to tackle the frog. They talk about eating the frog, right, in the morning. And it's that thing at the beginning of one of those types of situations where most people then turn around and say, okay, we can respect that. He's kind of addressed the elephant in the room a little bit as well.
Thank you. And again, love the personal story and insight. And it's another example of the power of mindset and just naming it. So this is going on. Might as well call out the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
The downside, it's already here. And then it's a great exercise. And so how are we choosing to view the situation that we're all going to have to go through together? Is this just going to be a painful, like, let's get out of here as fast as I can? Or since we're here, how can we make the best of it together? And not surprised someone asked this. It was kind of a fun linkage. This is what I love when things work out this way. Allison was wondering, where did your resilience or philosophy around mindset, like being able to shift your mindset, come from? Is this natural? Is this something you've learned? Like, what's that? Or any tips around how to do that well?
I think I'm blessed subconsciously. I've probably picked this up from my parents. So my dad, first generation immigrant into the UK in 66. He moved here when he was 14. He did not speak the language. Little to no education. Just before I was born, we were relatively well off. I don't know if we were wealthy. I mean, I wasn't there, but we were relatively well off, and we had a number of properties and so on. And I think it was just before I was born, or just as, we pretty much lost everything. We just managed to keep on and hold the family home. My mum says that was the best thing that ever happened to us. It kind of just taught us, again, I wasn't there, but I don't think they had lacked humility. It just reminded them of what was important. Now, growing up for me, they shielded me from it amazingly well. But at a very early age, I kind of cottoned onto things that where I might want something and it might be a toy. I didn't want for the major importantly stuff. But every Christmas, the next Batmobile had come out and really, really wanted it. And I remember this really clearly. Or the new Optimus Prime had come out. We couldn't afford it. But they never said that to me. They always kind of, mum always found a way, and it was a running joke of maybe next time. I think at some point I kind of realized that maybe next time means a no, but it was our little kind of joke, and we still have that joke now. But I think it's because of that, that resilience that was taught, and watching my dad kind of lose everything and then build his way back up, and the hours that he did and the work, the type of work that he did, because again, no education. He very manual labor type work, blue collar type work in driving cabs and so on as well, and taking two jobs at a time. Mum trying to raise me as a baby whilst running a shop, whilst at the same time dad was out working elsewhere and so on as well, with two other siblings, an elder kid, my sister in and out of one of the biggest children's hospitals in the UK because she was severely ill. at that time, I can't even imagine the resilience and the levels that they've had. So I think I've been blessed in so many ways that that's been instilled in me, right? And I'm probably going to get this wrong now, but in terms of what the exact saying is, I'll butcher it. But there's that saying of hard times make tough people make easier times, easy times make soft people. My kind of concern is that's been their hard time. They've come through that. I don't want to be the one to create that easy time that with my children create those soft right. people in that as well. Because invariably they'll find themselves back in hard times on that cycle. So that's really important to me.
No, well, thank you. That's all again. So this one got so many, I can't even go through them all. That's great. And just really appreciate the personal story, the openness to sharing, and then also the profound impact that had on you and sharing that with us today, because it is so valuable in terms of reflect on our own really formative experiences and how that shapes us. And time has flown. We have 5 minutes left, which I can hardly believe. And it's a beautiful way to end, I guess, or start to close our conversation today, Rokeel. You mentioned humility, and it's really, and this is something I'm very passionate about. I'm curious, to what extent do you see humility playing a role in our personal and professional success? How important is that as an attribute, as a skill?
Huge. If I looked at the big picture, I'd say absolutely fundamental. But at the same time, I think it can be a gift and a curse. I think humility can do one of two things. It keeps you grounded. I think that's incredibly important. Coming back to the previous bit, I get that from my mum, who has always stayed pretty humble. Not to say dad isn't, but mum's the first person that comes to mind. But at the same time, it can be a bit of a curse in that with some people, humility or the quest to constantly remain humble can often hold them back. It can hold them back from marketing themselves. It can hold them back from, I mean this in the right way, but sometimes you have to brag. I kind of learned that slightly the hard way and always try to come at things understated. Sometimes it's okay to announce your achievements and kind of put it out there in the world as well. And I think in the world that we're in today, marketing yourself is become ever more important, especially with the social media culture and so on and so forth. That's not to say you go out and create a complete false narrative and a false economy or fraudulent around that either. But I think if you do it in the right way with humility, with your feet to the ground, for me, I think that always comes into the, we have something amazing today that does not guarantee us anything amazing tomorrow. I mean, if you look at some behemoths of business, they don't exist anymore. And they never turned around and thought that in 12 months, 2 years, 5 years, that they wouldn't exist. We've all seen it, right? And I don't even need to go through the specific examples. It's understanding that could be us tomorrow. That could be us in 12 months time. That could be us in 2 years time. Don't think it will, but I'm also not going to tempt fate. So it's understanding that you're in that picture and that you're, I think one of the things that we would say internally, and I say to my people at various points, is it's never as bad as you think it is, and you're never as good as you think you are. And I've tried to remind people of that either when they're on their real low, but also if I can see they're on the real high, just to remind them, you're not as good as you think you are. But just remember that bit as well. So yeah, I think that underpins a lot. And a lot of my people remember that. I'd say that to them a lot.
Absolutely. No, and I love that too in terms of, well, okay, so then how do you not, as you were saying, like, want to make sure, well, people know about you and your success. And that's okay. That's a part of who you are. And then learning, just like as you were talking about earlier, accountability, that could be a skill about, so how do I, quote unquote, brag and let people know. And sometimes you're going to get it right. And sometimes you might go, oh, went a little, and learn from that. We learn from our experiences. I just think that's awesome. So we're almost at time, being respectful. Is there anything that we didn't talk about today that you would like for us to have spent some more time on? And so if so, what is that? And final thoughts to share with the audience?
I think there's some amazing questions and brilliant questions. And then there's probably so much that I could have shared and talked about and so on as well. Like I said, the hour's gone quickly. I think just from anything, it's that it's what feels right to you. It's what is individual to you. Trust your instinct, trust your gut. I think a lot of people can get caught up trying to be something that they're not. I know it's a word that gets bandied around on social media a lot, but that authenticity piece is also really important. Lead in your image. Don't try to be something or someone that you're not. Be comfortable in that, because you can spend all the energy and time trying to be something that you're not. It gets seen through pretty quickly as well. So I think that's a big part of it. And most people are human. Most people, want to be treated in a certain way themselves. So trying to ensure that you're treating others in the same way.
Well, I couldn't have asked for you to end on a better word than authenticity, because I want to extend an extra special thanks. Not this conversation has been amazing. So this has been end with the number of questions, the number of comments. Just for people who are listening, there are a whole bunch of things that have happened in some complications, shall we say, travel-wise.
Yeah.
And Rogel rented this room to be here today with us, to be able to have that conversation. We've been looking to bring this online. And for me, again, back to authenticity, I don't think, because sometimes, as you were saying, in the marketing side, or we can be really good at promoting certain ideologies, or here's what we're about. And I just want to take a special, you know, a moment to express a heartfelt sense of gratitude for you, that you prioritized this in such a way that you had every reason to go, you know what, this is not going to work. And I think it speaks volumes. All the things we talked about today, it's just to continue what I really take away from that conversation. Everyone here listening to this episode does as well, is that every single moment of choices about who we're going to be and the impact that we want to have, and that and to make those choices matter. So I just want to say that really appreciate the time that we had, Rogel. It's a really special gift, and wish you all the continued success. Can't wait to have you on again and to your next level.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining in. Really looking forward to seeing you on the next episode. Until then, bye for now.
Take care.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden, or reach out via LinkedIn, or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.